You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Mysteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls!
Welcome to Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit the Desperate Housewives. I'm Jordan.
And I'm Julia. I'll be watching this series for the first time.
And I am a veteran of Wisteria Lane.
So we are hoping to connect with other Desperate Housewives fans. We're hoping to inspire new viewers to watch this show. If you are a new viewer or a veteran of Eagle County, you can tune in on Hulu or Amazon Prime through IMDb TV to watch along with us or just rewatch the whole thing at your own pace. It's not a requirement to watch the show with us. No. You can just listen to our lovely voices take you through it, recap all the drama. We have a lot of fun. We make some jokes. We bring some realness to it because this is a soapy melodrama.
Absolutely. They don't make TV like this anymore. Not on primetime. So it's fun to discuss, and hopefully you guys will enjoy listening to us gab about it nonstop.
Yeah, we hope to put you to sleep at night.
Yeah,
we hope
or you turn get you through on. That commute, whatever we got to do.
However you're listening to us, we're happy that you're here. If you also want to keep up with some of our content, you can follow us on all the platforms on Instagram at DesperatePod and on Twitter at Desperate_pod.
And you can always message or email us. Our email is desperatepod@gmail.com. And then we have a website, desperatepod.com.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to your messages. We also would love. We would love it if you rate and review us on Apple Music. We are hoping for those 5 stars. We hope to deliver A+ 5-star content or 5 apples. We'd love if you leave us a note about what you're loving, maybe what you're looking for, your type, just anything.
Yeah, tell us anything.
Anything, but we would love your reviews so we can continue giving you what you'd like. We are here for you. We're here for the Desperate Housewives fans.
Yes.
So please go rate and review us. We're looking forward to that. We hope that you listen to episodes 1 and 2.
Yes, so we did a 2-parter deep dive into the pilot because there's a lot to cover. We meet all the ladies, and it kicks off with a suicide. So there's a lot to go into. So there is a 2-parter opening of our show. So give those a listen if you haven't yet.
Yeah, we, in episode 1, took you through part 1 of the pilot where we met all the lovely ladies. There's 4 of them. I'm not going to recap it all because you should just go listen to that episode, but there so much happened. We were emotionally raw after 20 minutes into this show that we split the pilot into 2 where we cover all their storylines in that part 2 episode. Go listen to them now, but also we're going to recap what happened because today we are watching season 1, episode 2 of Desperate Housewives, and it's titled Ah, But Underneath.
I'm intrigued.
I'm intrigued. Underneath what? Ooh, underneath where?
Here we go.
Underneath who? Whoa. But we're going to watch that episode today. So just to get everybody up to speed, everybody get on board with us.
Just so there's a refresher, you know, we want us all to be on the same page.
Yeah.
So just a quick recap of the first episode. We left off with the ladies finding a mysterious note regarding Mary Alice's suicide. And we, just to do a quick breakdown of the ladies. So Susan is the first wife. We'll kind of break down here. She is a single mom with a daughter named Julie. And she develops a little crush, maybe not so tastefully out of wake, on a new man in town named Mike, who also not so tastefully treated that like a social event. And
sorry, I'm dying. So you guys need to go back and listen to
that. Yeah, go back and listen to that because we do deep dive further into that situation there. We also meet Edie, the slut of Wisteria Lane, according to Mary Alice, who also is competing for Mike, and Susan accidentally burns her house down. So that was quite the climax there to that storyline. And then Gabby, our next housewife, we meet. She's having an affair with her 16-year-old gardener, so that's a crime. And
so that's a crime.
That's a crime. That's pretty terrible. She goes to desperate lengths to keep Carlos, her husband, from finding out about the affair. It involves her mowing a lawn in a ball gown. So great, great content there.
Yeah, that was an act of desperation.
That was like desperate.
All the people who are just tuning in now are like, they're taken aback. They're like, what?
When you sum it up like this, it sounds crazy. And we're only through two wives.
They're on the floor. They're like, hold on, what show is this? Or what? Yes. So those were two of the housewives. 2.5. We're counting Edie. Edie's 0.5 of a housewife. Yeah. She's divorced, we find out. But so is Susan.
Yeah, so Susan. So maybe they are like the two halves of a whole.
Yeah. They're like, how can we put these two together? Yeah. You're not whole unless you were once married. So the other two housewives were Lynette. We find out that she was a big dog in business. Mm-hmm. She was like a CMO or something, had some babies. And her husband made her quit her job because how else would they take care of their children if not having a wife at home to do it?
Apparently, yeah. That's
so how it works. Her children are just embarrassing and little terrors, and they run around making her life miserable. And she's embarrassed about it, and her husband sucks. That's what we learn. He comes home from a business trip and wants to have unprotected sex when she's not on the pill, and she slaps him.
I mean, they have four children under the age of six. Like, that's just irresponsible at this point.
Yeah. So that was her storyline. It was a little bit light. We're hoping to see more from Lynette mm-hmm. this episode. And then the other lovely lady, my favorite redhead in town, is Bree Vandekamp. Bree, we find out, has a high level of perfection. She's married to Rex, which is the most absurd name they could have thrown out here.
I mean, Rex Vandekamp, like that combined is truly bonkers.
It's awful. I mean, I feel for him. I feel for her. She has to call him Rex every day that she wakes up.
Brutal.
But her family hates her. They actively want to disown her. The highlight of that episode is that Rex asks her for a divorce at Saddle Ranch, which is offensive in every regard. And she accidentally almost kills him mm-hmm. by putting onions in his salad, which he's allergic to onions. And they are now in talks of getting a divorce, but we don't quite know if that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I threw out a theory last episode that I think this show is not about desperation, desperate acts, or desperate women. I think it's about women who are too good and too great for their men to be living on Wisteria Lane, mm-hmm. to be married, and as housewives, they all seem to be top-notch ladies, and these men are ruining everything.
I mean, Rex literally wants to divorce Bree because she's too good of a housewife. That's where we're at.
He did say that. He's like, you're too perfect.
Yeah. Like, all right. I can't win with these men.
That's like the line, it's not me, it's you. Or no, it's not you, it's me. Wait.
That's where our mind's at. Yeah. It's never us.
It's not you.
Never us.
But it's not me, it's you. You're too perfect.
Wait.
It's that
way. Wait. Oh, no, you're right. Wait.
If somebody could give us the correct line.
I'm having such a hard time right now. My brain's not working.
It's not me, it's you. No, it's not you, it's me. That's what it is.
But Rex is doing the opposite of that.
I don't know. Rex just fucked everything up.
Those onions should have killed him.
Yeah. He got our minds all twisted.
I know. Now we're all screwed.
Bree's too perfect for him. But my theory is that it's not about desperation at all. So that's where we left off. I'm hoping that every episode proves my theory because I love being right. but we can't wait to really see what's going to happen mm-hmm. because we're left with a lot of cliffhangers, a lot of will they, won't they. A lot of mystery. What's up with the suicide still? Will these women just move on with their lives and forget about Mary Alice? Because it seemed like that for a hot minute at that funeral.
Yes, yes.
So we're going to go ahead and watch this episode. You can go ahead and watch it too and then tune back into us. But buckle your seatbelts. We're going pedal to the metal once again.
Yep, absolutely.
We'll talk soon.
Season 1, Episode 2. Underneath. The ladies are left with unanswered questions after finding an anonymous letter in Mary Alice's belongings that suggested she was hiding a terrible secret. Susan and Edie continue to fight for Mike's affections after Edie's house went up in flames. Gabrielle goes to extreme lengths to hide her affair with her underaged gardener, John Rowland. Lynette tries to discipline her twin boys with tough love, but ends up joining in on their mischief-making. After considering divorce, Bree and Rex decide to take a swing at marriage counseling.
Ah, but underneath,
we're back and better than ever.
So are these ladies.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Good follow-up episode. Good follow-up.
They're up to bat and they're hitting home runs. Mm-hmm. I feel like I like this a little bit more than the pilot. Mm-hmm. I was astonished in the pilot about, like, how lackadaisical everybody was about their friend dying. But now I feel like they have dug their heels in. They've realized they've grappled with the loss a little bit more.
Yes.
They're maybe finally mourning, but
I think because, like, they spent so much time just trying to introduce the women, like, we didn't get to see, like, their emotional reactions to what was happening in the first episode because they were so focused on, like, what are their storylines? So, like, this episode felt more focused. Like, we got to see kind of those reactions.
Yeah, I felt like I was getting a little bit of whiplash in the first episode. Mm-hmm. Like, full car crash. We were just so far. We just went so hard that first episode that I couldn't quite hang on. But this one, I feel like we are approaching an acceptable pace. First off, we get a little VO from Mary Alice. Like I said, she is never leaving us. And I'm kind of glad because she's bringing some heat.
Her dialogue is the best. And her voice, like, I could listen to her. Like, I want her to do audiobooks. Like, Brenda Strong, you have a career in this. Do it.
I just want her to be my mother. Mm. I just want her to read me some bedtime stories. Yeah. Maybe she should have a podcast.
Maybe she should. Or we should get her on here.
She just reads through all of the monologues from Desperate Housewives.
Yeah, we just have her come on here and just read all the monologues.
Straight through. Like, nothing even happens. It's just her monologues cut out. But yeah, that's how we open. I feel like that's how we're going to be opening every episode, is a monologue from Mary Alice. And I'm not mad in any respect, in any way. I'm not mad. Happy with that. So we hear her. She very somberly says, "Taste, touch, smell, it all becomes a distant memory when you die. But sight expands. And you can see the world so much more clearly after you die." And that sounds sweet. It seems like she's enjoying being dead so far. And I'm like,
she's finding the positives. She's making the best out of the situation.
But I'm like, man, she's kind of selling me on this. Mm-hmm. Like, no more taste, touch. But
you should get to, like, spy on people.
Yeah.
And no repercussions.
I mean, being omniscient sounds great.
Sounds pretty rad.
But she says, "The living could see this too, if only they would look harder." Mm-hmm. And she's like, my friends are not, they're not awake. They're not online.
No.
Apparently. Nobody's looking. And we see Gabrielle underwater.
Yes.
And we're like, is she drowning?
Yeah, like, what's happening?
What's happening here? She's speaking from beyond the grave, saying this, about to flex on everybody, about to haunt them to no end. The peaceful facade of Wisteria Lane was shattered by her suicide, she says, and the discovery of her note. And if only she had looked harder, she would see that Gabby was a drowning woman.
Yeah, so it basically kind of covers the facade of Gabby and Carlos, like what Mary Alice saw as she was alive versus what she sees watching over these ladies. I don't know.
Last episode I said I had a theory that Gabby didn't even like Mary Alice. Gabby was like size 8. I knew it.
Which,
like,
is the meanest thing she could have said in that moment.
She also at the funeral was like, we would have known if Mary Alice had problems. She just fucking killed herself. She was really not involved in this. She hated this whole thing. She texted somebody in the morning of the funeral and was like, God, I have to go to this fucking funeral today. Like,
oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So my theory was that they weren't really that great of friends. So I love that Mary Alice comes in strong, flexing on Gabby, because she says, I saw Gabby's jewels. I saw a happy marriage. Mm-hmm. I saw, you know, all the clothes from Paris, but she was a drowning woman. We see Gabby underwater. We're left with this message, like, if only people would look, they would really see. Gabby's not a drowning woman. She's not drowning in this scene at all.
No.
Because her head pops up out of water and she starts sucking face with Mr. John Rowland, who's 16. And we're brought back to a very disturbing situation.
I think that, like, a lot of the VO from Mary Alice is, like, focused on the fact that, like, Gabby was a drowning woman, and then what we're seeing is the visual of John being the one to pull her out of the water. Like, her affair is like what's keeping her afloat right now.
Yeah, and I think Mary Alice said something about that, mm-hmm. too. She's like, the only thing keeping her going is like her
affair with a child.
I thought she was gonna I hope she didn't use the word sexy young gardener. But I think that's what the writers really wanted.
Yeah.
She's in the tub with John, and I'm like, why are they having sex in a bathtub? I'm like, bathtubs are gross in LA. We're in LA, and I would never, in any of the apartments I've ever lived in, I had a bathtub in my last one. I replaced an old roommate of some other friends of mine, and they were like, yeah, that guy used to take baths all the time in there. And I'm like, ugh. I'm like, why would you ever?
There's not enough bleach to make me feel comfortable with this now.
Never, ever would take a bath in LA, but I guess they're on Wisteria Lane. They own this house. You can safely take a bath there.
I think you could safely say that's like a custom tub, because that thing is huge. It's smack in the middle of their bathroom. First of all, I don't think I've ever been in a bathtub big enough to accommodate sexual activity. Like, I'm thinking about all the bathtubs I've seen and used in my lifetime, and, like, I'm trying to picture myself attempting to have sex in there, and I'm just slipping and sliding around. Like, that's how you get a concussion.
Yeah, what was the – I forget what they call it, but something claw tub. Yeah. It's, like, when the bottoms of it are, like, really antique and they have those claws, so it's, like – I'm going to call it a tiger claw bathtub. Mm-hmm. I know that's not correct. I'm going to look it up later. But, I mean, I would just want one of those, not to ever sleep – in it with somebody. I mean, everybody knows this is a general rule. Like, you don't do bathroom, like, sexual activity.
I feel like you get soap.
It's theoretically great, but it never is in reality good at all.
I just feel like anytime you're in water like that, you're going to give yourself, like, some sort of, like, infection or, like, pain. Like, that just doesn't sound pleasant to me.
They might as well have just been in a hot tub.
Yeah, like, I don't know. There's something visually, yes, very sexy. But when you really think about it, I can't get down.
You're, like, pornographically great. But yeah. Like,
I'm like, realistically, it ain't going to happen.
Either way, they are doing something in this tub. They're making out at this point, because that was... It was only TVMA.
Yeah.
Yeah, they couldn't show anything else. So, don't know what time this is. I'm like, did John skip class? It's kind of midday, but Carlos, we don't know that Carlos rolls up. Gabby doesn't. We hear a car door. Mm-hmm. It's the loudest car door slam ever.
Yeah.
And Gabby's ears perk up. She's like, what? Huh? Mm-hmm. She's scrambling. And yeah, it's Carlos. Carlos rolls home early. So he is strolling in super slowly because they have time to run across the entire house.
Again, with all the windows and blinds open, I'm just going to say that really quick.
They're not subtle. They're not trying that hard.
No.
They're not trying to keep it a secret.
It's, like, shocking.
Maybe she's one of those people that, like, kind of wants to get caught.
I think that might be the part of the thrill for her, like, is the fact that she could get caught. But Carlos also seems like he has a temper, so I don't think I would want that.
No. So Gabby makes John jump out the window. They're scrambling. He's super wet, and, like, she hands him a shirt. He leaves his pants there. He falls out half naked. And once again, like, it's middle of the day. It's school is out. There must be people bopping around on the street. I do feel this naked dude just jumps out your neighbor's window. You wouldn't notice.
I have a lot of questions about this, actually. Just for starters, I need to know, you're right, the time of day, because we still don't know when John is in school. We still don't know that. This could, I guess, be the sweet spot from, like, 3 to 5 when, like, school's out, but, like, people aren't home from work. Maybe. I don't know.
That's what it has to be.
It has to be. And then, logistically, if you're having an affair and you don't want someone to find out, why would you carelessly throw your clothes all over the fucking place? Like, that to me is like, okay, there is always going to be a chance that someone's going to roll up. You would want to be able to maybe hide the clothes or put them in an easy grab-and-go spot. Like, it's just like, logically, I'm sitting here like, she's bad at having an affair. Like,
she's terrible she's at it, terrible or she wants this. To be caught. Those are the two
it's
options.
It's crazy.
Because he's the dumb one. She's not dumb. I think she's really smart, but John is not thinking. Maybe that's why they got in trouble. John's, like, ripping off his clothes, just throwing them, and she's like,
carelessly.
Maybe she's, like, begging him, please don't do that.
Yeah,
and he
no,
does
she's,
it
like,
anyway.
Begging him to stop.
Because he's 16. He's, like, never had sex before, so he's doing all the wrong things and thinking it's really hot.
Yeah.
She's not correcting him, obviously. But Carlos says his meeting got canceled. He calls her out. Because she says, I just showered. John is out the window. She picks up the towel and wraps it around her head that he was wearing around his bottom half and turns around, and Carlos, like, rolled in, is looking at the mail. He's like, meeting got canceled. didn't you shower this morning? Why did you shower again? And I'm like, why is he keeping track of her shower schedule? You psycho.
Also, why doesn't she just say I took a bath? Because first of all, the bath's still going to be full. Like, just say she was taking a bath. Like,
there's like 5,000 candles lit in the bath. Bathroom. She went full Edie
with this one. Yeah,
she's like, why are all these candles lit?
She's like, romantic time with myself.
She's like, self-care.
Yes. Self-care queen.
Yeah, so that's one thing he asked. He's like, didn't you shower? And I'm like, suspect that you remember that. Like, maybe they fucked in the shower this morning. Maybe she did two bathroom sessions with two mm-hmm. different guys. I don't know. And then he's like, where's John? And she's like, like, she
might as well have, like, a neon sign over her head that says, oh, we were just, I'm cheating on you. Like, she's so obvious.
It has, and the neon sign has pointers, yeah. Like, down.
Cheater, cheater.
But she's like, why are you asking about him? What about him? Do you even know John? She's like,
yeah, John who?
Yeah, he's, like, our gardener. And he's like, yeah, his truck's out front. Like, what's up? She's like, oh, is she a relief? So, I mean, she lies like a champ. About the bathtub, about having worked out, about having showered, but she's still failing a little bit. John comes in clutch, though, through the open window. The window's pops still open, up. Yeah. He has a shirt on now. He's not looking confident with the shears, I have to say. Mm-hmm. He's shearing something, not looking like he knows how to use those. And Carlos is like, hey, what's up, man?
Yeah.
Too excited to see him.
Maybe Carlos is jealous of Gabby.
I think so. Carlos
wants John.
Carlos wants to be buds with John, yeah, for sure.
He does.
Like, he's
that's his homie. That's his bro.
You know that Carlos, like, sneaks him a beer once in a while. He's like,
oh, yeah.
He's like, I'm having a beer. You want one?
Yeah. And tosses John, one his way.
Yeah. John, in his mind, is like, I shouldn't really. Like, I'm not old enough. But he's like, oh, yeah.
They're just,
yeah,
like, corrupting this poor 16-year-old, like, making him have sex and, like, drink. Like, oh, my God.
He grows up to have.
Giving him cigarettes.
They just buy him, yeah, cartons. Oh, he's, God, like, I don't even smoke. Carlos is like way too happy to see him, and he goes, did you take care of that ficus? And I'm like, John doesn't even know what a ficus is.
No.
Don't talk to him with those terms. Like, he doesn't know. I still don't know why they hired this guy. He doesn't know shit about plants, for no, sure, 100%. So John has a dirty smirk. He shoots Gabby a wink through the window. I'm pretty sick at this point. I'm like, why is this happening?
Well, and then we get, like, a back shot of his, like, we find out that he doesn't have pants on.
Yeah.
Half naked.
So nobody drove by in this 5-minute time span.
So there's two things that I have to say about this. One, someone would have seen that and been like, that's suspicious. Like, that's weird. Second, they frame this booty shot like it's supposed to be hot, but he's 16. Like, I can't, every time they try to show him in, like, a sexual manner, it is hard for me to kind of, like, I know the actor obviously isn't 16, but the character is, like, they're framing it like we're supposed to lust after him. And I'm like, no, that's icky, man. Like, I feel icky about it.
I feel
it.
Gross every time, yes, I watch this.
And I'm like, ugh. Like, okay, like, I guess, yeah, that's a nice butt, but, like, I don't, that's a teenage butt. I don't like that.
But gross. Does he have teenage butt? Like, he's like 25, but does he have a teenage butt? You gotta dump him. Yeah, there's a lot of problematic things here. But this leads into Mary Alice. Mary Alice sees this all, I guess. She's, yeah, watching Gabby like a hawk because she hated Gabby.
I think they hated each other. Yeah. Like, they were frenemies.
When Mary Alice died and she saw what was happening, because apparently Mary Alice in life didn't know about this affair, as mm-hmm. far as we know so far.
Yeah.
Mary Alice died and saw this, and she's like, this is everything I ever wanted. She was thriving. She's running around whatever world you go to, yeah, and was like, yes, you guys don't fucking know. Like, my neighbor,
yeah,
fucks a 16-year-old. Yeah. She has a girl gang. They're watching it. All the people, wherever she is in her other life, her afterlife,
mm-hmm.
they're, like, watching this like we are,
yeah,
as a show.
Oh,
Mary,
my gosh,
Alice,
yes,
is, like, want to tune in to Wisteria Lane because she's fucking a 16-year-old.
I'm just, like, picturing, like, ghost Mary Alice, like, pitching the show to ABC. Like, guess what is happening on my lane?
She's like, I'm living.
Yeah.
I'm not because I'm dead.
Nice. So, that was a good joke.
Bad one.
No, I love it. That's staying in.
Yeah. So she says, though, what Carlos couldn't see couldn't hurt her. Couldn't hurt Gabby. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay. Then we go into the intro. After that, we're back on Wisteria Lane. and all the gals are together and we're confused because they're not friends, right? Not getting the vibe they're friends still.
No, they seem like kind of awkward. I'd like to point out though that they're actually like drinking wine together, so at least like it seems like they're socializing instead of just like having a meeting. I don't know, because like the first episode it felt like they were just kind of talking, but this one it was like, oh, like they got together for wine, like okay, like maybe there's something there. I don't know, that just stuck out to me.
Yeah, the first episode they were stiff. Yeah, they were stiff at the table, like they don't even know each other, like you're meeting an acquaintance for coffee for work or something, you're like, I don't really know you.
Well, and they like so basically like they're having like a little powwow to discuss the note that they discovered, whether or not they should give it to Paul, like, or sorry, Mary Alice's husband Paul. I feel like the answer is obvious. I feel like the answer, I mean, to me, I think they should give the note to Paul.
I'm like, okay, I didn't see the wine. I didn't notice the wine. I took a note that said they could have been having margs. They could have been having margaritas. They could have been having fun with this. There could have been music on. We didn't have to be sitting in silence, like, with the note ominously on the table, placed at the center of the table. And they are like, what should we do? I don't know that I would give it to Paul. I don't, you're like, it's obvious. I'm over here. I'm like, I would have been like, you guys, we should solve this mystery. I'd be trying to Scooby-Doo it.
I guess I just feel like Paul, clearly, like, part of why he is acting so strange in the first episode is he's, like, indicating that he doesn't understand, like, why she would kill herself. If he knew that there was, like, something happened. Like, because in his mind, he doesn't even think there was some catalyst. She just killed herself. Because at least the ladies know that, like, something triggered it.
Yeah.
I don't know. For me, I'm kind of like, maybe give it to him.
He's so suspect. We saw him at the end of the episode with the pool and shit.
Yeah, that's true, digging
that thing
up.
I think that he knew something was up. Why is he pickaxing his pool after his wife died? Yeah. So he's suspect. If I were Bree, I'd be especially suspect by the way he received those muffins at the funeral.
What's funny is Bree's like the least suspect at this meeting. She's like the chip. She's like, we'll bring him muffins.
And I know. Yeah. She once again was like, let's stuff him with pastries. Yeah. She associates men. She's like, we have to feed them with good baked
goods. Fatten them up.
Yeah, so they all have their own reactions. I think they kind of agree. They're back and forth about what they should do. So Gabby is like, no, he's still mourning. It's going to freak him out. Susan thinks he deserves to have the facts. It was his wife. Bree says, let's do it gently over coffee and pastries. And I love that she's not joking at all. It's so frightening. I enjoy every moment of Bree on screen.
Me too.
Lynette has the sarcasm. She's 100% a Miranda. And this
Oh my gosh, yes. I was going to say the same thing.
This is after Miranda's our thing, which was Sex and the City. So Lynette's like, I don't even want to be here. I can't think straight. My boys have kept me up for the past 6 years. She says, yeah, your wife has a secret. Like, here's another bear claw. She makes fun of Bree about the pastry comment. I kind of enjoy it.
I do too. That was good banter. I like that moment.
Yeah, but Gabrielle's locked and loaded after this. She says, let's just call the police. And I'm like, she's out for blood. She's like, let's ruin Mary Alice's life. Let's uncover this with an investigative report.
Yeah.
Bree is like, isn't this all in poor taste to like tell Paul, I think.
Yeah. I mean, like Bree's whole thing is like being polite. And I think like, she starts out wanting to tell him and then kind of by the end of the conversation is like, nah, we're good. I think that's kind of where the ladies end it, is they don't even really come to a conclusion.
Yeah, they can't decide. Susan is...
She seems like the most concerned about it, though.
Susan's gung-ho. She says, I hate being in the dark. Imagining all the horrible things that Mary Alice did. She was my number one girl. You know, we should really, like, figure this out. We need to tell Paul. But Bree comes in with a hard question. Comes in with truth. The age-old question, how much do we really want to know about our neighbors? And I have something in my life that I believe I follow this. I'll follow this till I die. Mm-hmm. You don't ever really know anybody. And I don't think you should want to.
I think, like, people put on whatever they want to put on for a reason, and it's, like, some people, maybe I want to learn more, but it's, like, you're right. Like, do we really want to know the dirty details of, like, people we live by?
Like, I mean, yeah, the people, like, you don't ever really want to know your neighbors, first of all. In LA, you never know your neighbors. Like, I'm surprised when people I know are, like, yeah, nobody I know is, like, hang out with my neighbor.
Yeah, you just kind of smirk at them.
You just kind of, like, do like head nod.
Well, yeah, because masks, so now you can't even smirk.
Yeah, you nod can't at even them. Do that. But my theory is you never know anybody in life. Mm-hmm. I even you, Jordan. I'm sorry. You're my best friend, but I don't even fucking know you. How well do I know you? Mm-hmm. There's not a time that you ever know 100% of the facts about anybody. And I think people always have the ability to surprise you. So this episode right off the bat was resonating with me because I think that's a huge question. And in answer to her question, you never really know anybody. So they talk about this for a while, can't decide what to do about the note, and they decide that they're gonna all go sleep on it, go to bed, and then hit this in the morning mm-hmm. and see what they're thinking. They go home and nobody can fall asleep. They can't stop thinking about the suicide. Mm-hmm. And I'm relieved at this point because I'm like, thank God, they're finally mourning. They're finally acknowledging that their friend killed themselves. So yeah, they sit there and they wonder. Mary Alice comes in with a voiceover. They wonder how lonely Mary Alice was. These women all feel lonely. You see them alone in their beds. I don't think any of their husbands are home. Maybe I misinterpreted that. But you kind of see them alone in bed.
I mean, they are if you think about it, like, Bree and Rex are separated. Or they're
not sleeping together.
Yeah, they're not sleeping together. Tom's, for some reason, literally always, still don't know what he does for a living, always out of town. Susan's single and Carlos is always, you know, late at dinners working. So yeah, like, I think that was like a big theme of this episode is like, just like the isolation and the loneliness that these women are like facing right now. Mm-hmm. It's almost like they're drowning in their own like isolation, which is kind of like the opening.
Yeah, they all feel very lonely, very isolated. So that's where Mary Alice kicks it off mm-hmm. with us going into their individual storylines. We kind of started off with Gabby at the beginning. I think we can continue with Gabby after we see how lonely she mm-hmm. is. So I think we can kick off with Gabby because mm-hmm. we saw her in the intro. And then on that lonely night where they all separate, we have an interesting thing that happens to her. Carlos comes home and he says, I know you're awake. Gabby says, I know you're a jerk.
Yeah, she comes in hot.
I'm like, she's snappy. So much animosity in this relationship. Dinner went late for Carlos. It was a business dinner because he's a businessman.
Again, they're all just business people, whatever the hell that means.
We don't know what kind of business. Yeah. So this is not our business, I guess.
Yeah.
So Gabby's mad that she has to eat alone 6 nights a week.
And she makes like a comment, a funny moment where she's like, I came this close to cleaning the house, which I appreciated. I was like, that's me as a future housewife.
She's ordering takeout.
Yeah, no, she orders takeout. She's got a maid. Like, she doesn't, like, I don't even know what she does as a house. What does she do all day?
I mean, I have no idea.
Kind of what she does
she
all day.
She fucks her gardener.
She fucks a 16-year-old.
But she only does that after 3. So maybe she sleeps in really late. I think she shops. Who knows? Yeah. But I say 6 nights a week is a lot to be. First of all, Saturday, too, or Sunday, 6 nights a week, he's gone. So wouldn't you be like, is he having an affair? Wouldn't you be a little bit more worried?
I would be concerned. And it's like, at that point, like, what even is, like, how can you even call that a marriage? I mean, again, we're not married. Let me reiterate this. But he isn't around. Like, 6 nights a week, I mean, you're basically spending most of that time with yourself. Like, what even is that relationship at that point?
Yeah, I feel like she could have started her own business at this point.
She needs something.
Got time on her hands.
Yeah.
But I still have lingering scheduling questions about when she's fucking John.
Oh, yeah. We have yet to see him in school, so.
Yeah, so she has some privilege here that she doesn't have to clean. We don't know what she's doing. So Carlos got her a gift, though, and it's jewelry. This seems to be his thing.
Just buy expensive things for her.
Yeah, it's white gold. I don't know what that means, but you were a jeweler. Is that like a really nice? What's the difference between white and other gold?
So like, let me deep dive into my jewelry history here. Yeah. But so white gold is just gold that has like a finish on it that makes it that silver color. Mm. It's just like, it doesn't tarnish. It's pretty. You have to get that coating done every few years because it will fade. So like, you'll notice like white gold jewelry will start to look a little yellow. But it's expensive, and because of, like, the coating, like, it's high maintenance. So it's, like, that's a piece of jewelry. It's like a car. You're going to have to keep taking it in to get work done on it.
So he wasn't really educated on what he bought her.
Should have gotten her some platinum if he's so rich.
It's like, an investment, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. The upkeep there. But he says, put it on and make love to me. And it is not – I didn't think this was sexy. I think that line could have been sexy if it was delivered in the right way. But he said, put it on and make love to me. And it was just this gross demand. And I was turned off.
This whole scene is so gross to me. Okay, you know what would have made it sexy? If he put it on her and then, like – made love to her. Like, I don't know, like, there was a lot of ways to make that romantic, and he like throws the box at her, basically. Like, fucking bashes her in the head with it.
But, like, he's like, catch.
Yeah, he's like, here, bitch, like, take it. And then, like, you know, she responds with, like, we could stay up and talk. And he's like, when this line killed me, it hurt me. When a man buys a woman expensive jewelry, there are many things he may want in return. For future reference, conversation ain't one of them.
Yep, I made that note too.
That was brutal. I sat there and I was like, that would, like, maybe I'm just, like, a bitch, but I would, like, be so hurt. Like, that would make me so sad. Like, that's, yeah, like, so depressing.
Well, first of all, you're married to this man. And let's reiterate, she married him on date. She got engaged on date three when she didn't even save his number yet. Yeah. So this is obviously, she didn't know him. Mm-hmm. You never know anybody, but she especially didn't know him on date three. She didn't know that he was going to be this type of asshole a year or 2 years, however long they've been married for. Mm-hmm. They don't have kids yet. I don't know what their timeline is.
I don't
is.
Know either.
But I feel like that sentiment, that statement that he made is a statement that a douchebag tells you on date five when things are kind of getting more serious. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I don't really want to do it yet. And he had bought you something and he's like, well, I didn't just buy this for nothing. And then you're like, oh, you're just a dick and I don't need to date you anymore. Like, that is the energy. That was date five energy of a guy you never want to be with.
It was super entitled and it wasn't like he could just do that to anybody. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like a personal gift for Gabby. It was just like, I want to have sex when I get home. And I know she's going to be mad that I haven't been home. So I'm just going to throw this gift at her.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, dude, like that's not thoughtful. It's like, it wasn't a gift to make her happy. It was a gift to like get him what he wanted.
Yeah, I agree. And she's mad about it. And I think rightly so. And he says, it was a joke. And I'm like, stop gaslighting her.
That was not a joke.
It like wasn't a joke.
Yeah, that was not a joke at all.
It wasn't funny. You have bad humor then.
Yeah, if that's a joke, like, sir, you, like, this is never joke again. Never crack a joke.
And then he's not done. Not done yet. Mm-mm. He says, you've been acting crazy all week. And I can't fix it unless you tell me what's going on. Or all month. He says, you've been acting crazy all month.
And he's, like, grabbing her wrists, like, really aggressive. Like, again, like, with the jewelry thing, like, there is another way to do this where it wasn't, like, he can say, like, hey, you've seemed off this past month. Like, I can't fix it unless you tell me what's going on. Like, say it, like, with kindness, maybe. Yeah. And not physically, like, she was clearly telling him to let go. Like,
yeah, maybe not after degrading her and saying that he expects her to have sex with him. Mm-hmm. It was all types of wrong, but things get real. They take a turn because Gabby says it's not exciting anymore and that's what's going on. It's not exciting. I need you to take my breath away. And Carlos is like, what can I do? And Gabby's like, you can be 16 and out in our front yard doing yard work. You can pass linear algebra. Like, you can be born in 1991. Like, no, that's not what she says, but like, in case you think
I'm serious. Just in case. Just in case we need to clarify.
But she says, you can surprise me, you can take my breath away. And I don't think that's constructive either. I think, Gabby, you could work on what you're looking for, because is that really going to make you happy?
I mean, it like hasn't made her happy because he still is buying her expensive. Like, she's basically saying, buy me, still keep doing that, but do it slightly differently. I don't know. And like, what's weird about this moment too is like his reaction to her saying all that is like actually very like receptive, it feels like. Like, he does seem to care. So it's like, where he's hot, he's bipolar, because he went from like it just like so many different emotions in that scene. Yeah, but he like seems to actually like want to do that or fix it. I don't know, but like I said, maybe it's all for himself. Like, it doesn't, like, he just wants to get her back to having sex with him. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe he's a narcissist.
Like, that's the vibe I get from him.
Yeah, I think that's the word.
As people that have dated a lot of narcissists, I think we can safely say.
I think that word's thrown around a lot, and it's, like, maybe not completely inclusive of him as a of his entire personality. Mm-hmm. I'm sure everybody has narcissistic aspects, but, yeah, it was concerning. Like, if my friend told me that this was going on, I would be like, honey, like,
sweetie,
maybe, like, maybe you don't want to hear this.
Yeah, but, like,
but next time we see Gabby, she is creeping in a driveway.
This shit's wild to
She's
me.
Straight up, like, parked across the street from this woman's minivan. Mm-hmm. Like, they could see each other. It wasn't that far. She wasn't secretive.
She's, like, trying to be incognito in a little black dress and, like, cheetah print high heels and like a scarf. Like, she's like the most obvious. She looks like, it's so out of place.
Trying,
I can't even
be
believe
incognito it. 5 feet away from a person
It's just really weird. That
she's trying to avoid.
I feel like you would draw attention dressed like that in a neighborhood.
Yeah. So she's doing this, and you might be wondering, where is she? Where is she trying to be incognito at?
Mm-hmm.
Where is she trying to be incognito at? And it's at John's house, and we're concerned once again. Like, why are you at his house, you
also,
icky lady?
Why is he not in school? Yeah. Where? What time is it?
What? Where? Who? We have all the questions, and we're not getting a ton of answers.
No.
But it's crossing so many lines and boundaries that she's doing this. Mm-hmm. I think this harkens back to The Graduate. I think that's what they're trying to do.
Because he calls her, like, Mrs. Solis.
Yeah, there's that, but also to the bonnet thing. I think bonnet's the wrong word, but the hair cover and the heels and the slinky black dress are very akin to The Graduate. If you've never seen it, get some taste. No, if you've never seen it, give it a watch. Yeah. It's actually really good.
Give it a whirl.
So she knocks on the door. John's like, what's good, Mrs. Solis? Mm-hmm. Surprise, surprise. He takes her up to his room, and this is mistake number one. I'm dead. I'm dying. He's like, sorry for the mess. And it's the most juvenile room I've ever seen. It's the most juvenile room. It's like you walk in. If you've been on this, you've been on this date. I've been on this date where you walk into their room and you immediately are regretting everything.
I mean, it's a teenage boy's room. Like, literally. Not just like, oh, that guy never grew out of stuff. Like, no, he is 16.
He had like a magic
that's
eight
an
ball.
Appropriate room for him. Like, that's appropriate.
Yeah, he doesn't even have a Pulp Fiction poster yet because he's not even old enough to have seen it.
No, he's not in college yet. He hasn't gotten the classic Pulp Fiction, Clockwork Orange, or Fight Club poster. It's one of those three. It's always one of those three. And you run. You always gotta run if you see one of those.
Yeah, so I don't know how she's not immediately turned off by this and thinking, I regret everything. How is she not immediately like, I'm fucking up? Like,
yeah.
I have a husband who makes money and like has a life. Like, this boy is 16. He's a boy. He's a boy. I can't.
I know. He's a kid. I mean, I know that's like 16 is 16, but that's like, oof. I don't know, man.
So John's like, you just missed my mom. And Gabby's like, I didn't want to fucking see your
mom.
Yeah,
like, why would he say this? Like, he's like, come meet my mom. Like, no. Like, what the
Like,
fuck?
She drops off his paychecks to his mom. Like, he doesn't have a bank. My God.
He doesn't have a bank account. This man does. Oh, my God. She's fucking a guy without a bank account.
Jordan, he doesn't have a bank account.
Oh, my God.
Whoa.
This revelation just like ruined.
This just rocked my world. He doesn't have a bank account, so she probably drops off those checks to his fucking mother.
Oof.
I'm done.
Oh, no.
I don't even know if I can continue with this because I am so shook. Because I always joke, I'm like, I don't want to date him if he doesn't have a 401k. Mm-hmm. This bitch is out here dating a young boy.
Yes.
A kid.
A child.
That doesn't have a bank account.
Maybe we know he has a driver's license at least.
Oh my God, stop.
Because he has a truck there.
So either way, he's like, you missed my mom. And she did that on purpose, John. I know it's hard to understand, but
I know it's like not computing.
And she's like, we need to talk about the other day, you know. And he's like, what?
He's like, you're breaking up with me?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. He goes, he's like, in my own room? And I'm like, bro, that's going to happen to you all the time. Like,
this is a preview.
I'm like, you should actually, I'd say that's considerate of her to break up with you.
She's supposed to take him to a public, like a restaurant, break up with him?
Yeah, to Saddle Ranch. John's like, is Carlos catching on? Gabby's like, he's dumb. He's dumb as a brick. That's my type. Like,
yeah, she likes dummies.
She's like, the dumber the better.
Yeah.
That's why I like you. And she's like, when you come over to garden, you really have to garden. And that's when I think he says, you're breaking up with me. Mm-hmm. But she's like, I can't give you that reference if you don't actually garden.
Yeah.
Yeah, from here, they're kind of talking about the situation. And she's like, I don't think it's safe to keep fucking at my house.
At least not the way they were doing it, throwing their clothes around all willy-nilly and keeping the blinds open.
Yeah.
I'm like, there's middle ground here. Like, she can't, like...
Yeah. He's like, well, where are we gonna fuck? He's like, I only have a bike. We can't even fuck in my car. No, I just assumed he was, like, biking over to her house. But he does have that truck, so they could fuck in the car. She's like, well, I mean, how long's your mom going to be gone?
Yeah, so they decide to start banging, like, in his teenage boy bedroom, which is just, like, you know, those sheets haven't... Well, maybe they have been washed. You know why? Because his mom is... Mommy's doing it for him.
His mom is doing it. She's cleaning that room, because I assume that she's also a housewife.
Yeah.
I really want to meet John's mom now that we're talking about it. John is, like... Oh my God, Mrs. Solis. And he's like beet red. And he's like, I have to go meet up with my four other girlfriends. Like, he's John Tucker.
Yes. Like, and I love that his name in this is John.
I know. I'm like, this is a John Tucker crossover that we need.
Exactly.
Like, I love it. But he takes off his shirt. He's wearing a wife beater. And I don't like that either. It's inappropriate to call them a wife beater, but that's what it is.
Yeah.
And they start hooking up. She looks around the room and sees that childhood picture of him playing baseball. And she like puts it down.
She slams that thing down.
And I'm like, yeah, because it reminds you that you are committing a crime.
That picture of him's like 4 years old.
I was gonna say, it's not even.
It's not that far. Because you know how boys just like, puberty just like hits them like a truck. Like, that probably was literally, that was probably when he was 12. And that's literally 4 years ago.
I can't. Yeah,
yes, it's like, disgusting. It's fucked up.
We see Gabby again after they fuck. And once again, I have to remind everyone, John is 16. He's bad in bed.
That's the thing that I think is the craziest about all this, too. Not the craziest, the felony is, but the second craziest is the fact that he probably sucks at fucking. So what is she getting out of this point?
That's what I'm saying.
Like, no bank account. He doesn't have a bank account. I can't stop thinking about that.
The whole rest of the episode is just us.
John doesn't have a bank account.
I can't get over it, but I don't know what she's getting out of this. We find him laid out. He has like his hands behind his head. He's like, oh, he's like deep sighing.
Yeah.
And he's like, I have tons of homework. And Gabby's like disgust. I hope she's disgusted with herself that he said this.
She dried right up after that.
And he says, it's so much easier to concentrate after sex. And I want to cry. I can't believe this writer's room. They went so hard. I love it. I love how hard they went with this.
I do too.
But it's making me grossed out. And then he gives her a rose. He has a little rose thing in his room. And he grabs that real quick. And he's like, I thought of you the other day when I saw this. It's a single rose and you're so beautiful. It's perfect. Just like you, Gabby. Gabby sees that he's falling in love. And like a savage, she hauls ass out there.
She gets
there.
The fuck out of, like, she runs. You know, and it's like, I don't know what she thought was going to happen. Like, she's this older woman. Like, she's beautiful. Like, he was probably a virgin before her.
Yeah.
Like, of course he's going to fall. Like, I don't know. Like, she looks surprised, I feel like. Yeah. But it's like, sis, he doesn't know what he's doing.
Maybe she didn't accurately gauge, like, his softness. I could see her.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I'm maybe sorry. She thought, I don't even know why I'm theorizing. Yo, he's 16. Yeah. Get the fuck out.
He doesn't have time. I don't think it's possible for him to be, like, a true, like, fuck boy or anything like that yet.
Yeah, like, I was going to use that phrase. I was going to say, maybe she didn't accurately gauge how disengaged he would be from it. Maybe she thought that he would have some fuckboy tendencies.
But it's like, he's 16. Like, you were saying, like, he hasn't had any experiences to harden him, to make him terrible. Like, this is how fuckboys become fuckboys, actually.
Yeah.
This right here. This is his
Sagittarius
origin story.
Rape.
This is his origin story.
It's this is right before he becomes John Tucker.
Yes, this is how he became John Tucker. That's crazy, actually. Oh, my God. This is fan fiction. You need to write this.
I mean, we're going to write it together.
This is, like, our screenplay, like, yeah. the prequel to John Tucker.
We just start writing a bunch of prequels to things. Like, when you said Brenda Strong was from Seinfeld, mm-hmm. like, how she ended up on Wisteria Lane, yeah. like, the interview to get John in here, mm-hmm. how he becomes John Tucker. We got a lot working for yeah. us. So if any of you fans out there want to elaborate, like, hit us in the DMs.
Yeah.
Of what your theories are. After she hauls ass out of John's, realizes that he's in love with her, hauls ass out of there, we next see her when she is coming back from a shopping date with Susan. So this gives us confirmation that they're friends.
I feel like that's what this scene is supposed to be, is like, look, they're friends and they talk about things. Remember, they're neighbors. Like, I don't know. I have to say, when we are in that scene too, like, you see... before they acknowledge it, like, you see the rose, like, prominently placed. Mm-hmm. And I just, like, okay, in my mind, like, does Gabby like that he's falling in love with her? Like, that's the weird thing, because it felt like when she bolts. It's like, ugh. But now, like, it's like she seems to like that he's becoming emotionally attached.
I think she likes the attention.
I guess.
I think everybody likes the attention.
Because Carlos is so cold, but, I mean.
She's a complex lady. I'm not sure what's going on there, but I think she likes the attention. And it's flattering.
Mm-hmm.
But Susan's dishing about the Edie situation.
Which, yeah, we'll circle back.
We'll get there. She doesn't say, like, I burned Edie's house down. But she's like, Edie's trying to date Mike, too.
Yeah.
So Susan sees the rose on mm-hmm. the table. It's prominently placed. And Gabby is like, the gardener gave it to me. And Susan's like, I see you, sis.
I know. Susan kind of gets, like, weirdly suspicious, I feel like. That's, like, I feel like the show, it's, like, people noticing, which we'll get to later with Martha Huber. But, like, people are, like, noticing really weird things and, like, zoning it, like, clocking in on them. They're like, yes, this like, tunnel vision moment.
Maybe we're just not meticulous. Maybe we don't have an attention to detail we just don't. That we need. We see Gabby a few days later or so lounging on the stairs admiring her underage rose once again.
Mm-hmm.
And this is near the end of the episode, and we hear a horn beep outside, and we're like, what could that be? Carlos bought her yet another material thing.
I mean, it's a pretty nice material thing.
I'm all like, ew.
I'm like, I mean, I wouldn't be upset about a new car.
Yeah, so it's a Porsche.
Is it?
I'm pretty sure it's okay. a Porsche.
I don't know. I'm so dumb with cars. I saw the sign. I'm like, well, I have no idea what kind of brand this is. It's a rich person car.
We just know it's a rich person car. Yeah. I think it's a Porsche. Can't confirm. But he starts listing it off, and I'm like, sponsored by Porsche? I don't know. He lists it off, like, it has GPS, 200-watt sound system, rear parking camera, and I'm like, that's, like, my car, but, like, whatever.
I know. Like, a luxury car in 2004 is, like, standard now.
Yeah, it's pretty standard. So, either way, in 2004, this was a huge deal, and he's like, isn't it the best gift you've ever gotten? And I'm like, that's a leading question, Carlos.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever. She can't stop thinking about that underage rose, though.
Well, it's just frustrating because it's like, this is what she told Carlos she wanted. Like, she knows that this is how he, like, if you tell Carlos, I want you to buy me gifts, like, this is what he's going to do.
Yeah, she fucked up.
Well, and then John's over there looking all sad, and it's like, what did he think is going to happen? Like, what did he think was going to happen? Her husband's rich as fuck. Yeah. Apparently. I don't know. I don't know what he does, but he's rich.
He like bought it on credit card. He's actually like in so much debt.
Yeah.
John doesn't have a bank account. Carlos is in debt. Like, she's making some financial mistakes with these men.
Yes.
So Mary Alice voices over as Gabby is trying to look excited about this car, but mm-hmm. you can see in her eyes as she stares across the way at John raking leaves as like a poor boy. That Gabby responded the only way she knew how. And she says, yes, this is the best gift I've ever gotten, and kisses him. And, yeah, plebeian John is doing work, raking leaves. And he's like, guess my rose meant nothing.
Yeah, and I just feel like she's kind of letting him, like, fall in love with her. So it's like she's kind of, like, letting him get hurt. Like, I don't know. I feel like she should have shut that shit down. Not, like, framed the rose in, like, the main entry of her house.
She can't help that she's hot, Jordan.
You're right.
That's true. She can't help that people fall in love with her.
I know, she's kind of mean to John. I'm like, why is he, like, he just likes the sex. That's how you know, like, he's a kid. Like, he has no idea. He doesn't
know anything better.
Yeah.
So, after we leave Gabby there, we pick up with some Susan.
Mm-hmm.
Our favorite quirky girl.
I love Susan. She's like our little, like, you're right, she's quirky, she's clumsy. I don't know, I love it.
She is her as a person is the energy of when you are multitasking and you're on your way out the door.
Mm-hmm.
You have 5 meetings booked up, but you also have a doctor's appointment. Your dog needs to take a piss and you are late for something.
She's always frazzled.
That is Susan as a person.
Yeah. That is a perfect description of her energy.
You haven't eaten all day. You're a little hungover maybe. That's her as a person.
Well, and she's like, I don't know. I think she's like the most relatable. I said this last episode, but I just think she's like really relatable because she is single and like trying to date. And I think for us as unmarried women, like that's like the easiest character. So I think like for me, like, I enjoy her storyline just because I like kind of watching this like meet cute or like this attempt at dating that she's just so like not prepared for.
Yeah,
like,
where she's feeling really awkward, maybe not super, not the most confident she's ever been, you can tell. I enjoy watching her do that. I enjoy watching her swoon over Mike, who is 100% aloof and maybe doesn't even like her.
I have comments on Mike's behavior in this episode.
Yeah, you guys, get ready for Susan and Mike.
Buckle up for this one.
I feel like we're going to be on a long ride with them. I just get that feeling right now. But we start with her on that lonely night that we discussed at the beginning, and she awoke alone and parched, and so we see her getting some water, and Mary Alice's voice, I think it's Mary Alice that voices over, she says, as Susan got her glass of water, she saw the tall glass of water that she really wanted, and it's Mike, shot of Mike in the road with his dog.
Yeah, so really quick, if she was trying to sleep, like, what time is it? Like, why is he out there walking his dog? What time is it? Like, 11 p.m.? Like, what the heck? I don't know. That just, like, I'm like, that is weird that he's just out there.
It's a little weird. I don't know. We're not dog owners here. I'm not.
I don't think it's normal to take your dog on a walk at 11 p.m.
I'm a cat person. So I don't know what you're doing with your dog, but Julie's like, you have to ask him out. Susan's like, I hope that he asks me out. And I appreciate this approach. That's correct, Susan. You shouldn't be like bringing him gifts. You shouldn't do everything you did pilot episode.
She's already doing too much.
You shouldn't burn some bitch's house down over this.
Yeah, no, she's literally ruined someone's life over this. crush.
She's ruining someone else's life. Not only ruining her own life over this, but so Susan says, shouldn't you be making brownies for your nerdy friends? And Julie is like, can't find the measuring cup.
And Susan has like this like flashbacks to her like burning down the house and making, she makes these crazy faces when they're like, she's like, like thinking about it. Like, I want to be there when the director was like, okay, so here's what you're going to do. Like,
yeah, this flashback is crazy. And Susan's frazzled, normal state of frazzled, but a little bit elevated now. Next morning, Susan's taking out the trash in a robe, and Mike walks by, and she is frigid. She freezes, because he says hi.
Well, and she's like, she looks quote-unquote bad, because she, like, just rolled out of bed or whatever, but she looks the same. Like, her face, like, she looks fine.
None of these actresses ever look bad, because they're just naturally hot.
And I think they're trying to say in that scene that she's, like, looks bad. I'm like, she looks literally the same. Like,
this fucked up my self-image for the rest of my life.
Like, her robe's like off one shoulder. That's it.
I'm like, that's hot now. Yeah, that's like the sloppy look that is in now.
She looks cute.
The no makeup look is in now. So Susan was killing it if this was 2021.
Yes.
But I wanted her to turn around and Mike to just recoil. I wanted him to be petrified by her, but he was like, whatever.
I do have a theory, but I'll wait.
His dog is named Bongo, like the drum, and I had a revelation, just like John doesn't have a bank account. Like, Mike is the type of guy who has definitely been a part of a drum circle.
I believe it. I believe he has bongos, you know, tucked away.
He's been a part of a drum circle on a beach. Like, he came across one in Cancun where they were drumming. They were doing steel drums somewhere in Jamaica, and he was on vacation. He's like, I want to get in on this.
Yeah.
And, like, it inspired him. He, like, loves bongos now, named his dog Bongo. I can't get over it. It's something that, for me, I'm like, Mike is a weirdo.
Probably.
This is where I realize he's a weirdo. But Julie's watching this weird interaction between Mike and Susan. It's really uncomfortable because Bongo the dog, not the drum, is barking at Susan and doesn't like her. And it's not because she's not wearing makeup. I think that Susan has that frazzled energy that throws off dogs.
I'm telling you, man, I think that the director or whatever, the writers, were trying to imply that, like, that's how bad Susan looks. Like, that Bongo's, like, getting, like, losing his mind. Because she's, like, she looks that bad when she rolls out of bed. Like, because they really are trying to push that she looks bad. And I'm like, okay, yeah, the dog wants to attack her because she looks like a monster, apparently. I don't know. Like, that, like, I have to know.
It's all fucked up. But the dog's barking. Mike's like, sorry. And then it kind of dies. And this Susan's out here in left field winging it. And so she aggressively, urgently, with a lot of Chihuahua energy, goes, do you want to come over for dinner?
I know. It all comes out as one word.
She says it urgently, aggressively, all that energy. Mike whips his head around.
And he smiles. Says, he smiles.
Just us two. And she qualifies it and she says, no, with Julie too, my daughter. And she fucked it all up by saying she's going to bring her daughter.
Yeah.
And then she makes it even worse. She's a terrible, like, Gabby is the number one liar on this show.
Yeah.
Gabby's Susan's killing terrible it. Lying. Gabby's killing it, lies left and right, and everyone's believing them. Susan tries to cover this up, makes it worse. She says, it's a tradition that I do. And Mike's like, but you're a lousy cook.
I know. I'm like, he's like, aren't you a lousy cook? Like, and he doesn't, I don't think he means in a mean way, but he's like, isn't that the whole shtick when we met? Was that you're telling me how bad I am at cooking?
He's all like, sorry, I had your mac and cheese. I'm not interested in dinner if you're cooking. And then she says, well, it's new. I'm working on the kinks. I am a lousy cook, but we order takeout. And he's like, so you invite people over for dinner and then you order them takeout?
I do like, you know, he kind of gives her a little sass, but I do like that he, like, offers to cook for, like, Mike is giving signals in this scene to me that he likes her, like, he wants to cook, like, he's offering to cook for her and have her over, and is, like, trying to turn it into this nice thing.
I mean, Mike's on his A game here. Yeah. He remembered these facts, and I'm impressed. I'm like, he does like her, but he's just giving her a hard time, and it gets even better for Susan. This is going really well for something that is so shitty.
Yeah.
Like, she handled so badly. But Mike says, why don't you come and I cook for you? Come over. And, I mean, girls gotta eat. He says, Friday at 6.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm there. She strolls inside, tells Julie about that win. They high five a bit.
Yeah, Julie's, like, proud of her.
Yeah, Julie's really proud. And Susan's like, you're gonna be motherfucking sick.
Yeah, like, bitch, you're gonna have the flu.
Yeah, so Julie doesn't know about the fire still. We just have to point that out. So
I feel like Julie would be, like, a team player about it. Like, honestly, like, Susan sucks at lying. She needs someone like Julie to get her through this.
Yeah, and we'll see that later in the Susan-Mike saga.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we see Susan sprinting over to Mike after he gets home from the store.
Definitely didn't have a bra on. Her boobs are all over the place.
She ran over there fast. She was, like, waiting at her window.
Yes.
But beep, beep, Edie drives up.
Edie, Edie. She's a bad bitch in this scene. I love how Edie plays this, like, this whole scene.
Mike says, I'm sorry about your charred house.
Sorry it burnt to the ground with all of your belongings.
Yeah, and, like, then he says what's going on with him and Susan.
Well, like, they're holding the groceries. I think Edie, like, says something like, what's all this? Like, she says something about it. Like, ask them about it.
Yeah. So he's like, I'm cooking dinner and we're having it at her house, I think, or something. They elaborate on this dinner. Yeah. And Edie's wearing, like, a baseball jacket type of thing. I'm not sure what Edie's wearing in this scene, but it's a look, and she's wearing it well. So Edie comes up to Mike, dips her hand in this bag, and grabs a cherry to stick in her mouth. And Edie has clocked this round already.
She might as well have, like, grabbed his hand and, like, stuck his fingers in her mouth. Like, that's how I felt watching that.
She grabbed, like, his hand, stuck it in her pants.
Yes. Like, she, like, oh my God. I was watching that and I'm like, that was kind of hot. I'm like, all right.
We were turned on.
That was hot.
Edie is our favorite.
Yes.
So Susan feels sick. It's like watching an accident in slow motion and she knows it. So Susan invites Edie over. It's a curious scene, and Edie refuses at first.
Yes, I noted that. That was a good move.
But this is a part of her ploy.
Yes, it works, though. I bought it. I was like, yes.
Mike is like, no, please come. Susan's daughter's coming, too. And
like, you won't be a third wheel.
Yeah, Susan's regretting everything. Yeah. She's like, why did I have to have a child ever? She's going back to the moment Julie was born. Yeah. She's like, this is fucking up everything.
Yeah, this is the worst.
Edie is vicious. She says, this will make up for the dinner that you never threw me.
I know. Edie plays this whole scene with such, like, savagery. Like, I was like, whoa, like, this is, I need to take notes.
I know. We're taking notes for our own life. Susan taps the fuck out, though. Susan's down.
She's knocked out. That was a KO.
Yeah. So
then she goes over to Paul.
Yeah.
So Mary Alice's husband. So Susan walks over to Paul and Zach. And she asks Zach, like, where his dad is. And he takes him to the garage, where Paul is just, like, openly wrapping this, like, suspicious-looking trunk or thing in plastic wrap and duct tape. And Susan doesn't even, like, acknowledge it. Like, he doesn't, like, why would he be doing this at midday when anybody could just walk in? He doesn't even seem to, like, care that she's watching him do this.
Yeah, so last episode we saw that there was a trunk that he pulled out from the bottom of the pool that he was pickaxing. Mm-hmm. He drained his pool, pickaxed it. None of the neighbors noticed this far. He pulled a trunk out of there. Now he's in his garage wrapping this in duct tape and shit. Mm-hmm. Super aggressively, I might add. Very aggravated. And he's like yelling at Susan. And he's like, Mary Alice has abandoned us and I will never forgive her. And like, I don't want anything to do with mm-hmm. you guys or her or this whole thing. So it's like a weird interaction.
It's super weird. And it like kind of culminates with Susan deciding not to like show him the note because he says point blank, I don't care what her reasons were. But I feel like that's just him like clearly they were hiding something. I mean, like there's a trunk. He dug something out under their pool. I don't know. I just feel like if he had the note or if she told him about that she found a weird note from the day Mary Alice died, it would at least like get him on the mystery of like, does someone know something? Like, what's going on? Because it was clearly a blackmail note.
Yeah. I'm not sure like where this leaves us. I'm glad that Susan decided not to show him the note. She's picking up that Paul might be a suspect husband. Mm-hmm.
And then the last scene with Susan before...
Well,
it's not even really with Susan.
I would like to touch on something. Oh. So Susan's sitting there after Paul aggressively drives off, I believe. Mm-hmm. And she's sitting there, mouth agape, skinny in that driveway. And Mary Alice sees this and she voices over, it's not enough to want the truth. You must know where to look for it. The truth is elusive because it knows where to hide. Mm-hmm. So we're left with a little bit of a mystery there.
Also, really quick, I love the fact that Susan zeroed in on the rose but didn't say shit about the suspicious-ass trunk. I just want to say that really quick.
She wasn't like, what are you doing? What's in that trunk?
She's like, this rose is really perfect. Smirking at Gabby like, huh. But then like sees this guy duct taping and plastic wrapping a trunk and driving off aggressively. No words.
Are they trying to like point to like, oh, the rose is feminine and like how could she understand anything in the realm of a man's cave of his garage?
I don't even know. Like it's bizarre. That was a bizarre choice.
It was weird. So that's where we leave off with Susan and Paul. And then we see Mrs. Martha Huber coming over to Susan's house while she's away. Mm-hmm. And she's begging for these clothes for Edie, mm-hmm. which I just still am annoyed that this is even happening. This is dumb to me. Yeah. She breaks and enters again. This is Martha Huber's M.O. because Julie does open the door and she says, what's up, Miss Huber?
Yeah.
And Miss Martha Huber, like, opens the door and walks in, kind of.
I don't think, yeah, she didn't invite her into the house.
No, Julie wasn't, like, come sit down. She strolled right into that house and Julie runs upstairs to look for some clothes or mm-hmm. something. And Miss Martha Huber sprays some perfume on herself and, like, looks in the shopping bags on the table.
Oh, she's snooping through all her shopping bags and like that's where she finds a new measuring cup and again people noticing things that they normally shouldn't
what
be
the fuck?
Like and this is a callback I guess we kind of didn't touch on it but she found a measuring cup in the rubble of Edie's like burnt home and somehow zeroed in on that and so like I guess she's making this connection. I like the odds of her putting that shit together is nuts and like I kind of noted here, like, she must be lonely, just, like, watching way too much, like, Murder, She Wrote. Like, she's, like, an evil, like, Jessica Fletcher.
Monday through Friday night vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we touched on the measuring cup, but she sees the measuring cup in the bags, and light bulb goes off. I have to talk about Mrs. Huber's choice of shirt. It is very loud. It is a, like, floral print. It's kind of crazy. Then we are getting set up for this dinner mm-hmm. that we've been building up to. Pongo is already barking at Susan as she arrives to help set up. She tries to arrive early, but Edie's already there, active in that apron.
Mm-hmm.
Bongo loves Edie. Loves her.
Loves her.
So Susan has lost there.
Yeah. She's I have to give so rounds, far behind.
If I have to give rounds 2 and 3 to Edie, they're there.
Yeah.
The dinner is happening. Edie is on offense. She brings up Susan's divorce. I think you and Carl will get back together, she says.
She's like so mean. Like that. She like literally goes in the spiel like, I just never saw people with such a connection as you two, blah, blah, blah. But this is where Julie, being the best character on the show at this point, comes in and just like brings up, you know, Edie's fourth husband. Edie has to be like, oh, I only had two husbands. And I this is where I'm like, how old is Julie? Because like Susan's like, no, that wasn't her husband. That was her special friend.
I know. I was like, I noted that Javier was her special friend. So you should just drink every time you hear Bongo during this episode, because he fucking, you hear the name Bongo or you hear him barking because this dog is annoying. And Edie taught the dog a trick, and Susan is furious for not thinking of that.
Mm-hmm.
Mike is so impressed. He's never trained this dog. And so he's like, wow, Edie, good job. Like, he doesn't know any tricks. Now he does, I guess. So Susan's like, what the fuck do I do? What do I do? So she goes into that kitchen and she puts gravy on her hand and ear. So she goes back in and Bongo's like up on her ear, like licking her all over. Mm-hmm. And Mike's like, swift change.
Yeah.
Interesting. And then the dog starts asphyxiating. Julie is like, Mom, you're dumb. You're dumb as fuck.
Yeah, she's like pointing at her earring.
Yeah, the dog ate the earring. Mike has never moved faster in his life.
I know. He like teleported next to Bongo.
He's like, we gotta go. Edie, will you stay at the house and clean up? And Susan's like, I'm so sorry this is happening. Mike's like, I gotta go to the vet now because everything is ruined. Susan's like, how can I help? And Mike's like, you've already done enough. And it's the hard and fast no about her coming to the vet. Next time we see Susan and Mike, it's at the vet. Susan takes it upon herself to roll up there.
With a bone.
Yeah, with a bone.
It was a nice little gesture. And I like this scene because I like that Mike, like, now that he's calmer, like, apologize. Like, he, like, apologizes to her for being kind of snappy and short. But this little scene, like, we find out that Bongo's going to be okay. There's a nice little joke about shitting out the earring. But this is like where he, like, Mike starts to open up, like, about his, I guess, dead wife.
This was her dog, and Mike promised on her deathbed that he would take care of the dog. You see in Terry Hatcher's acting and on her face, like, how much she understands this.
Yeah, like, I think Susan, like, she's a good person. Like, she's not, like, Mike's not a piece of meat, whereas maybe Edie kind of sees him like that. Mm-hmm. And, like, Susan genuinely just wants to get to know him and, like, sees him as just a cool person.
Yeah.
And I like this scene because it is nice to see her just, like, be there for him. I don't know. Yeah. It's sweet. I think it's sweet.
So after that, we catch a glimpse of Edie cleaning up, looking hot cleaning up. Mm-hmm. She's at the house still. She's doing what Mike asked her to do because she's trying, also trying to still get laid. We see her cleaning, and then the camera moves behind the wall of his cupboard. He's hiding some shit in his cupboard. He's taking names. There's stacks of cash. We see that gun again. He's packing heat. This brings us back to our thesis of this episode. Like, how well do you ever know somebody? Did Mike even have a wife?
I know. That's, like, the question. So is he, like, being super vulnerable about something that didn't even happen?
He's a good actor.
I know. I'm like, wait, is his wife dead? What's going on?
Yeah. So how well do you know anybody? And me personally, as Julia speaking, not speaking for any of these characters on the show, you never know anybody. But all of this takes us to Bree, my queen. After they talk about the note, that lonely night, Bree is sleeping alone. And she goes downstairs. She knows loneliness all too well because Rex is sleeping on her couch. And she asks him if he remembered when he proposed. I hope for his sake that he does. Because they are, as we recall, talking about getting divorced. They're having lots of problems. And so she's down here on this lonely night trying to express how she's feeling. And she's not doing it super well.
She basically just brings up, yeah, like, first of all, okay. She talks about how, like, they, when they got engaged or when they decided to get together, like, he promised, you know, like, yada yada, that he would, like, be there for it, like, would always try. She brings up her first fiance, like, she was, like, engaged to someone else at the time, whose name was Ty. Like, did Ty she just Grant. Like, did she just have a thing for, like, guys with, like Rex, Ty? Like, those just, there's something very weird and preppy about those names that I don't like.
I'm like, but where was Ty? What happened to Ty?
I know, Grant? I need to know the story about Ty. But, like, that just, like, really stuck out to me. I was like, fuck Rex, let me hear about Ty. Also, bitch, you made the wrong choice.
Like, well, maybe Ty's not a doctor. We find out in this episode what Rex does. So we know what one of the husbands does, and he's a doctor of some sort.
Maybe a surgeon. I don't know.
He's got a god complex.
Yeah. He must make a lot of money.
But she's like, do you remember when you proposed and we sat on Skyline Drive and drank apple wine? And I'm like, what the fuck is apple wine?
I don't know. It sounds good though.
I'm like, I drink a lot of wine. Wine is my alcoholic drink of choice. Yeah. And I've never had apple wine.
Me either.
So I was like, whoa, she's opening up my world. But yeah, Ty Grant got questions about him. Mm-hmm. And she's like, my daddy didn't like you. And I married you anyway.
I know. I want to know, like, what her dad didn't like about him. If he was, like, pre-med. Like, what was wrong with him? I mean, maybe her dad just suspected those, like, fuckboy tendencies.
But basically, this whole conversation, she's kind of begging Rex to not leave her. That they need to fix this marriage. This whole conversation, she's basically begging Rex to stay with her because she's like, I have to show Ty Grant what I did, that I've made it, that my marriage is happy.
That it was, like, worth it.
Yeah. She's like, I need to flex on Ty Grant still.
Yeah. So they decide to go to marriage counseling.
So that's where that leads us. Next time we see them, we are at Dr. Albert Goldfein's office.
We see this montage of all the different couples that he's worked with and all their problems. And, like, then we meet the Vandekamps. So the quote is, like, he thought he'd seen it all, mm-hmm. and then he met the Vandekamps. And then Rex makes the comment, like, you're going to make a lot of money off of us. Like, why is he so – he's just so negative, man. Like, I don't
– Rex has a bad attitude 100% of the time.
Yeah. I don't like his attitude. Like, he's already going into this, like, with a really, like, fucked up – and, like, he says that line, and then they cut to her being, like, here's – homemade potpourri for you. Like, that's somehow weird and bad. Like,
what is potpourri?
It's like scenty. It's like that scenty stuff that you can put in, like, a bowl, so it, like,
oh,
like in the bathroom.
I don't know. Brie is opening up my world every day.
But I just feel like they cut, like, that line is almost like that's annoying of her. I guess it does encapsulate what Rex hates about her, which is that she's good at stuff. I don't know. Like,
that seems to be what everybody hates about her. They seem really to understand. Just be hating that she's nice and that she likes doing nice things
and is, like, good at being a housewife.
Yeah. So we see a little bit of their session, and Brie provides background info and small talk about their life, mm-hmm. and it's like Rex is there talking about issues, I guess. It seems like Rex tried to talk about issues in the session and Brie just couldn't.
But something must have happened that made her feel like she can't express herself. Like, you don't just – that doesn't just happen overnight. And I feel like – I don't know. I'm just not buying that he didn't play some weird role in her becoming like this. Also, theory, maybe she just has, like, a really serious case of OCD. Like, that's what, like, this – because as the scene goes on, we see her fixate on, like, the counselor or the therapist's, like, button. Yeah. It's, like, loose and she wants to fix it. And she's, like, so fixated on it. I was like, maybe she really just has, like, OCD or something.
I think that's a strong theory.
Yeah.
I think, like, that's actually what's going on.
Yeah, like, like, she needs help. Like, it's not like she's a bitch. Like, she just needs help.
Everybody's so annoyed with her and she's just deep down struggling with OCD.
Yeah, like, really bad.
It's a serious disorder, actually. Like, yes. People struggle so much from that. So I think everybody should be a little bit more empathetic towards her. But yeah, she focuses on this loose button. Rex is going on and on about, I don't know if she feels. She's always pleasant. And then she is tuning this all out. Like, I love it, though.
Yeah.
I'm like,
heart's, like, pounding.
Love that she didn't hear any of that because she can't get over this button that is loose, mm-hmm. on her therapist's jacket. And her facial expressions are great. This actress is killing it. That's kind of where we leave it off on their first session.
Mm-hmm.
She gets called out. And she admits that she can't really talk too much more about her feelings in that session.
Yeah. I mean, I think that she probably does just have, like, some emotional, like, barriers. But I mm-hmm. also, like, this doc needs to, like, maybe he should bring it up. Like, hey, have you ever, like, tested for OCD? Like, I don't know. I just feel like they're fixating on, like, her having emotional issues. But it's, like, it takes two to tank. I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, we next pull up to their second session, and Rex has a quote-unquote hospital emergency.
That's where we learn he's a doctor.
Yeah. The doctor offers to do, like, a solo counseling session with Brie, which I think would be really beneficial. Like, nothing wrong with that.
She turns it down at first, mm-hmm. but she turns it down, and then she regrets everything. She turns around sharply, and because the button's haunting her. She's shaking about it. She's like, actually, let me take off your jacket.
Yeah. And he looks at her like he's going to get, like, raped or something. I don't know. Like, he literally looks at her like, what?
Yeah. And then she fixes it so fast. The therapist is thankful. And they are sitting shooting the shit about Freud.
I actually really liked this discussion. I like this.
Did you study psychology? She disputes Freud, and they have a good conversation about it. There were no appliances in the 1800s mm-hmm. when Freud grew up, and his mom had to do backbreaking work to make sacrifices for him. And then he turned around and made theories about how everybody's fucked up about their mothers. And I'm like, tell us how you really feel, Brie. Tell us how you really feel. And she says, did Freud ever think to say thank you to his mother? Or did anybody mm-hmm. even think to say thank you?
Yeah.
And the doctor's whole life has changed at that moment. He sees Brie. He finally sees Brie.
I think he sees, like, her struggle.
Yeah.
And I like it because my favorite part is when he tells her, like, well, a lot of Freud's theories have been discredited, and she gets, like, this, like, insane smile. Her skin is really taut. I just want to say that really quick. Like, her skin is, like, tight and, like, perfect, but she gets, like, this delightful grin, like, good. Like, love that.
Yeah, and I think this also is evident of her OCD. She was able to open up. Mm-hmm. She was able to talk about things that were bugging her as she fixed his button on his jacket.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh, some people need that minuscule work or, like, menial tasks to help them relax, and I think for Brie, that definitely is what happened here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Rex is back in counseling the next time that we see them. And he, I've noticed, always has a tone of anger and is constantly yelling.
Well, he is so, like, mean. He's just mean. Like, we cut to them and he's just going, you're right, like, he's yelling. He's going off about how annoying it is that she does nice things around the house. Like, he blames her for everything and, like, does not, he literally says, I've been a perfect husband. And I'm like, but then Bree's also been a perfect, what is she doing that's not perfect?
Yeah.
What does he want from her? That's what I don't understand.
He says verbatim, all of our problems are because of you.
Which is crazy.
Then he says, what have I done wrong?
Oh my God. I get mad watching that scene. I was getting, like, really, really mad.
Yeah. So Brie is helpless and I don't blame her. She's looking for a life raft mm-hmm. because what do you say? I mean, she doesn't seem like an angry person and she feels pretty defenseless. Dr. Goldfein swoops in for the save, though.
He does.
And he says, do you acknowledge the benefits of living with Brie? Hard and fast.
I know. Real quick.
He says, your home is always clean. She cooks. And he's like, do you say thank you? And he's like, look at what you have. And Brie and Dr. Goldfein are, like, homies now.
Yeah, but that's true. And, like, Rex is just like, thank you? Like, did he not? Has he never said those words before?
he's like,
what does that mean?
He's like, can you explain the meaning of that? He's
like, can you put that in a sentence? Like, I'm not sure.
Can you elaborate a little bit? I think there's a disconnect here. That wraps up Brie and Rex and their dysfunctional marriage.
He's unreasonable. I just want to say that really quick. Rex is unreasonable. You can't reason with an unreasonable person. Like, he's not even willing to work through it. It's like he just wants a different wife.
Yeah. Last but not least, we have Lynette mm-hmm. and her children. I mean, shocker, this storyline is going to be all about her children because she no longer has a job.
I know. The storyline was, like, fun, but, like, compared to all the other storylines, it definitely felt a little weaker.
Yeah, we don't even see her on that lonely night. We just catch up with Lynette when she's driving that minivan around.
Yeah, and her kids are literally going insane.
Honda Odyssey 2004.
Hell yeah, baby. Top of the line.
DVD player in bag.
Yes.
Those doors open on their own. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where we catch up with Lynette, and she's getting pulled over because her kids are jumping around. They do not have their seatbelts on. They didn't buckle up.
They did not buckle up.
Did you? so they didn't buckle up, but they're not wearing their seatbelts, jumping around, and then a cop pulls her over, and he is relentless.
He's nasty.
He is just giving her a hard time, writing her that ticket, not even understanding, mm-hmm. and she says she yelled at them, but they didn't listen, which, all right, whatever.
And he says, you have to find a way to control your kids. After all, that is your job. And I was like, I mean, he's not wrong, but also, like, her kids are just the fucking worst. Like, they don't listen. Like, what do you even do?
Yeah, I mean, clearly he's never seen her in an office setting.
No.
He's never seen her handle business mm-hmm. in front of a room full of board members. He doesn't know who he's dealing with.
Exactly.
So his name is Officer Hayes, and Mary Alice Young says Officer Hayes had never been in danger in his 6 years as an officer. until he met Lynette, because he had never told a woman how to raise her children.
She went into berserker mode. Like, that's what I would call it. Like, she, okay, really quick side note. When she steps out of the car, we get a full view of her outfit. And I just have to point out that she's wearing, like, bootcut jeans, flip-flops, and a pearl necklace. And I'm just like, this is a lot. It was just, like, a lot to take in.
Like, what happened to you this morning?
I'm like, ooh, the flip-flop choice? I'm never going to vibe with that.
They're, like, those $2 Old Navy ones.
Horrible. So horrible.
Yeah, she steps out of that car, and she approaches him. And her fuse is really short. Mm-hmm. We've seen this, I think, in the last episode when she slapped her husband. She's got a short fuse.
Yeah.
And she goes into a monologue about she has no help, no babysitter. And I haven't slept through the night in 6 years. Like, you don't understand. And he reaches for his gun.
Yeah, he, like, I'm just going to let you off with a warning. And then she goes, I accept your apology. And you know what? I'm going to start saying that when I get people to, like, bow to my will, even when they don't apologize, because I want them to know that, like, I'm still viewing that as, like...
that you should have apologized. Yeah. That's a big message. I love that. You should have just apologized to me.
I really love that part.
Then we catch up with her when she's talking to Miss Martha Huber.
Of course, Martha sees this whole interaction with the cop because she, like, brings that up.
But... yeah, she's like, I saw you getting pulled over. Yeah. And she's like, I also need clothes for Edie, by the way. And she says, Edie is a beggar now, which means she can't be a chooser. And I'm like, did Miss Martha Huber get baptized last Sunday? I know. And, like, can't let it go that she's now a Christian because she is being super dramatic with, like, these. She's a beggar. Like,
well, and then so, Lynette, like, gives her clothes. And she, that's what she says that. And then she, like, pulls out this, like, ugly piece of trash and is like, of course we don't have to add salt to the wound. Yeah. So she's, like, this, like, catty Christian bitch.
Miss Martha Huber will maybe be the most problematic character on this whole series. But... she starts talking to Lynette about her kids and being pulled over, and Lynette admits that she tries everything, but she can't get them under control. She's exhausted, and so Miss Martha Huber tells her a disturbing story about being left on the side of the road by her mother, and Lynette's like, I could never, but like Miss Huber says that her mom came back immediately. It was like to test the kids, test them right back.
To, like, scare them. But, like, what's funny is, like, Lynette sometimes seems like the kind of, like, mom that, like, wouldn't, like, you know how there's, like, the overprotective mom, and there's, like, the moms are kind of, like, boys, you know, they're going to get into trouble, like, they're stupid. Like, she seems like that sometimes, but the way she reacts to, like, being the kid being left on the side of the road is, like, whoa, like, it doesn't seem like she's that kind of mom to me.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like this is something she would have already come up with.
I don't know. I think Lynette's just tired. I think she is creative, but she's tired as fuck. she's like, I just don't have the energy.
Yeah.
Then we see Lynette next when she is driving the minivan yet again. She realizes her children are evil and challenging her, and she remembers what Miss Huber said. And she whips that car over to the side of the road, and she's like, get out. And she floors it, speeds off, and the kids, like, are unaffected. They're once again disassociating from her.
Yeah, they're like, okay.
They're like, okay, mom. She parks the car like 10 feet away with her little infant in it, and it's just like taking a breather, doing some meditation.
Manifesting well-behaved children.
Manifesting going back in time. Yeah. Fixing all this. But then she drives. It's like 5 minutes. She takes five. Drives back, and those kids are gone.
Which would be terrifying. I would freak out. Like, that would be scary as fuck.
And she's frantically searching for them. And I realize in this moment that her kids' names are Carter, Preston, and Parker.
Porter.
And they are those boys, Porter?
They all have P names.
Oh, is it Porter? Yeah, not Porter.
Porter, Parker, Preston, and Penny is the baby.
Fuck. Even worse.
It's like the whitest thing ever doing that. Why people always do that?
Well, sorry. Parker, Preston, and... Porter, Parker, Preston. They're gonna grow up to Hayes and Sigma Nu.
They're horrible names. Like, they're raising future frat stars.
Yeah. So I hate this, but they're gone, and she is running around the neighborhood, which I don't know why this is her approach, but she's like, where are they?
Screaming and, frantically.
Yeah, this lady comes out on her porch and is like, you're a neglectful mother. Your boys are in my kitchen, and like, that's what's up.
She's like really aggressive with Lynette.
She
and I feel like what she did, like Lynette doing that wasn't that crazy. Like this woman's like, you have anger issues. I'm like, Lynette didn't even like yell at them or anything. Like, what does she mean anger issues? Like her response was way, way, way over the top.
Yeah, Lynette's like, meet me halfway. I have four kids under six. Like, yeah. I'm not angry. I mean, she is kind
of
angry.
I mean, she does say like, of course I'm angry, but she wasn't even that, like she didn't do anything that angry. I don't know where that came from.
Yeah, and this lady's like, you abandoned them. And I'm like, whatever, like, I don't know, this lady sucks. So
when she like grabs Lynette when she tries to get her kids.
She assaults her. Yeah. I wrote that. The woman assaults her, grabs her arm, and is trying to kidnap her boys. Yeah. This woman is more problematic than anything Lynette did.
And I do love that her boys are like not shitty for once. They do love their mom. So they were like, I love how they just push this old bitch down and like get in the car. Yeah, she's a broad. Like that's the definition of a broad.
So yeah, they bite her in her butt and they protect their mom. And I'm like, these kids are so bad, I have to say.
They'll throw hands for their mom. They'll be terrible to her, but they'll throw hands for her.
So they all roll in the car. Lynette's like, get in the car, boys. And she gets in the driver's seat and she is about to say, okay, boys. She looks back and they buckled up so fast. Mm-hmm. She didn't even have to tell them. And I like this because last time I was clowning on Lynette hard. Mm-hmm. I was like, those kids suck. I hate kids. Yeah. But if Fuck this is kids. Something that can happen, I can maybe get on board. I think they just want their mom to join in on their troublemaking. I think that's all they want. So that's where we leave Lynette. And where the hell is Tom? Who knows? Her husband. We revisit Paul.
Yeah. So we just kind of get like a little ending, I guess, with Paul, which we kind of get like the title, like under the surf or, you know.
But underneath.
But underneath. There we go. My stomach. Sorry. Okay. So, Paul, like, he took the trunk to a lake, and it sinks. And, like, that's just, we're watching him, like, chuck it, basically.
Yeah.
I feel like it was safer under the pool.
He chucks it over a bridge somewhere into water. And, yeah, I agree. It was much safer under the pool. Nobody was going to drain your pool and pickaxe it. I don't know what was in there, because it certainly wasn't a body.
And it's a wooden box that shit, like, doesn't sink very well.
Yeah, I'm like, we could bury a body together. Me and you could bury a body together better than he could.
It was just like he literally made the situation so much worse. Like, again, we don't really know what's in there, like what he's trying to hide, but it's like I wrote here like 8 times, like, why would he dig that thing up? Like, I like literally put in my notes, I know I've said this before, but it seems like under the pool is so safe to hide something, no one's going to look there. And that trunk, like the way it sinks, it's like, is he just gonna trust this gonna stay down there? Like, my brain, like,
we would be more competent at whatever he was doing. So we're not crazy. Even sure what he's getting at, but I'm sure that we'd be more competent at it. It was weird as fuck. He's angry looking the whole time he's doing it. Yeah. And he doesn't do it well. And I think we see it come back up to the surface. It doesn't sink because it's a fucking wooden box.
Yeah.
And it's wrapped in duct tape and all this other bullshit.
There's air in there.
Yeah, it was. He didn't think this through and he's not doing a good job at hiding his secrets.
He should have burned it.
Yeah, he could have just left it under the pool.
Or just left it under the cement pool. Like, I don't
know. Nobody cares.
Like, we have to get this across. It's not like one of those pools where, like, you buy it at Costco. Like, it was like they laid cement over that box. Like, no one, what, is anybody looking for what's in the, like, that's, like, the question, I guess. Like, why, I can't fathom what, his thought process makes no damn sense.
No, it made no sense. So that's where we finish off the episode. Mm-hmm. And, like, yeah. So that's where we finish off the episode.
Yeah.
We're left with several mysteries here.
Mm-hmm.
We are left with what was in the trunk. Why was Paul so bad at getting rid of it?
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen with Bree and Rex? They're going to keep going to counseling.
Who's going to get the upper hand with Mike? Is it going to be Susan or Edie?
Yeah. When is Brittany Snow going to come into the series to sweep up John Tucker?
When does he start dating Ashanti?
Lynette, is she going to keep participating in her son's troublemaking?
Mm-hmm. And is what's going to happen with Gabby and John? Like, is she going to be able to keep this secret?
Yeah. And also, will we ever figure out that Susan burned down the house? Mm-hmm. Will we figure out if Mike actually had a wife? Like, what he's doing?
What's going on? Why does he have all that money?
We're left with a lot of mysteries. And the women didn't decide what they're going to do with the note.
No. But I felt like while, like, we're left with a lot of questions, we, like, jumped forward with these stories. Oh, yeah.
We're
really
loads ahead of where we were. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's do... Or do we want to do the Apple ratings, or do we want to do the Housewife of the Week first?
Housewife of the Week.
Okay.
I think I have to give it to Gabby.
All right.
Oh.
Even after the bank account revelation?
I think that's why I have to give it to her.
Okay.
No, I give it to Gabby because she thought on her feet.
Okay.
Often she lied several times and told good lies that were thought of in the moment. Mm-hmm. I think she's a great liar. And I think she's fooling everyone at this point. I don't know how, because she's not very good at her affair. She's doing it with her windows open and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But she's getting away with it. What about you?
I mean, I'm going to have to go. I'm not picking one of the main four. I'm going to have to go with Edie this week.
Oh, shit. I'm going to Edie. What? Okay.
So to go back to the scene where she weasels her way into the dinner, I just, the cherry, everything about it was so, I learned from her.
Actually, that cherry, yes.
Okay. I learned some moves. I learned, okay, like when she turns down the dinner the first time, the way she kind of gets her little digs at Susan. And I love Susan, but I got it, you know, Edie knows how to play the game. Yeah, so I'm going to have to go with Edie this week. She's my housewife of the week.
I respect it. Yeah, well, with that being said, we have our housewife choices. And now I think we can go into our Apple rating.
Yeah.
Okay,
three, two, one.
3.5.
Oh my gosh. Hey,
feels good. Yeah. Feels good. Feels great. Yeah. Why was it a 3.5 for you?
I think, again, it's kind of the same reasons last episode that I had, which were, like, I think that not necessarily the intro to the characters, but I think all the characters pretty much had, like, good movement in their story, mm-hmm. except for Lynette. I do still think Lynette doesn't really have, there's not a lot of motion. It's just kind of like things happening.
Yeah.
So there's not really a narrative there yet. I'm hoping to see that soon because mm-hmm. I said this last episode, I think Felicity Huffman is an excellent actress and I want them to give her more because like that throwdown with the cop was really great.
Yeah.
She knows how to like, yeah. And when she's looking for her kids, like I'm like, oh, I want to see her do more. So hopefully like she gets more meat. And then overall, though, I think, like, the stories move forward really well. We got some really great one-liners, especially from Martha Huber. Yeah, so 3 points, solid episode. I enjoyed watching it. But I'm excited to see, like, better episodes.
Yeah. For me, it was a 3.5. I had a 3. I gave the pilot a 3 mm-hmm. Because Lynette's storyline was so weak. For me, I did think this storyline was better than Lynette's first. Mm-hmm. So that's why it got bumped up a bit there. I think we're learning more about Mike and Bongo and mm-hmm. all this and his wife. I'm liking the backstory. So same as you, we're progressing places with characters in the pilot that we didn't. We're just seeing more dynamic storylines as these. We're learning more about these characters. Mm-hmm. Great one-liners. Mary Alice's voiceover once again slaps, even harder than the first one almost. I liked the overarching question, do we ever really know our neighbors? Do we ever really know anybody?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that question was a great one to start off episode 2 as we go into these mysteries. I hope you guys enjoyed episode 2 just as much as we did.
Please go to Apple Music and rate this episode or our show, 5 stars preferably. But we're always here to get some fun constructive criticism or just tell us what you want to hear. And be sure to follow us on all of our platforms.
Follow us on Spotify, follow us on Instagram, mm-hmm. follow us on Twitter, check out our website, www.desperatepod.com. Shoot us an email at desperatepod@gmail.com. We're looking to connect with you guys. We're looking to give you what you want.
We want to hear your opinions on the Housewives of the Week. We want to hear how you felt about the episode. We want to turn this, it's like a discussion, you know? We want participation.
Yeah. So also tune in to our next episode. We're just going to be trucking along chronologically here. So it'll be episode 3.
Yes.
Whether you've already watched it in your head or you want to rewatch it with us, we're going to give you our opinions on a lot of the things that happen. And we're excited and looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. So with that, I have to say, know your neighbors.
Know your neighbors. Make sure they're not digging shit up in the middle of the night. Keep an eye out.
All right, guys. We'll talk soon.